To Gambling with an Edge, I'm Bob Dancer.
And I'm Richard Munchkin.
Today is another Bob and Richard Go to Their Mailbox show. Keep our questions coming, and we'll answer them as best we can. Before we get started, Richard has something to say about YouTube.
Oh, yeah. So there was kind of a screw-up on YouTube, totally my fault. Basically what happened is YouTube, for some unknown reason, stopped us from being able to earn any revenue a couple of years ago. And then just as out of the blue, they said – they turned it back on and said, you can have revenue. So apparently they were placing ads in the middle of the show, actually stopping the show to play ads, and they weren't skippable. And I didn't realize that was the case. It turns out I was not good about digging into all of the settings on the ads and things like that. So one of our listeners brought it to my attention. I'm certainly fixing it going forward. I don't know if it's there in all the old episodes, and I'm unwilling to go through 500 old episodes to check. So anyway, I think that I have that taken care of. I think there will be no ads in the middle of the show, and if there's an ad at the beginning of the show, it'll be skippable. So, but as always, if you get the show on Stitcher or Spotify or iTunes or any of those places, you won't have that issue to deal with. So that's the scoop there.
So everybody gets to hear every week how the South Point has more than 10,000 games.
Those are our ads. These were ads that YouTube was putting in for, I don't even know what they were for, but, get your Viagra at,
Okay, good. So our ads are unchanged. People can skip them or not as they wish.
Right. By the way, one of the things I never really understood why people listen on YouTube, because I, listen to podcasts using a podcast app. But one of the nice things about YouTube is because of the show notes, you can see on the timeline every section from the show notes and where the time is. So you can literally just with one click skip the ads, our ads, because you can see it on the timeline where it ends.
Yes, and I always like you can listen to them at 1.25 speed or 1.5 speed.
Yeah.
The shows go much faster that way for some reason. And I speak faster, of course, and with a higher voice and don't pause many times. So while we're talking about commercials, one of our questions was about, have there been any potential advertisers who we've passed on? And the answer is there have been a whole slew of them who qualify as sporting pick touts, whether they're races or sports books. There's a lot of touts who want to advertise on our show, and we simply don't take those. And
there have also been online casinos or online bookmakers where I don't really know the reputation, because the last thing I would want to do is advertise like an online casino and then have somebody get stiffed. And I'm not exactly sure what the legality of that would be anyway. We have just kind of avoided online casinos, online bookmakers, and certainly touts.
Yeah. Recently went the other direction. There was a product called Manscaped where they were thinking about having Richard and I tout their products. Now, this is a series of products to so you can shave, perfume, and groom your nether regions, shall we say. And I'm 74 years old and overweight, and I'm firmly of the conviction that there is no market to see my junk with or without being well-groomed. It's just, haven't tried that, but that's just my guess. So I have gone au naturel in that area for 74 years and see no reason to change it. There are a few, there's a nose hair clipper, which I would use, but otherwise we could talk about the product, but we wouldn't be users. And they go, nope, you got to be users to be advertisers. So, and partly I was worried about Bonnie's health. I figured that if I told her that I was going to shave my balls in order to get new advertisers on the podcast, she would laugh so hard it might give her a heart attack. And so I just couldn't see myself putting her health at risk. So so they've decided not to do that. That they didn't want us if we weren't going to be active users to for their products. Richard, were you planning to use their products to?
Yeah. As you say, they have the things for trimming your nose hair and, you know, ear hair or things like that. I would certainly have tried those out, but yeah, I have no plans to start shaving my scrotum.
Although you have two sons that are
age. Maybe they would have used it. Yeah, we would have to have guest endorsements. People come in and tout them.
But, oh, well. So we missed that chance. Let's get to the rest of our questions. You often talk about how stupid casinos are and some decisions antagonize their customers. If you were to design your own casino, what policies would you implement to attract players and keep them?
Well, in my own case, I would use basically the Barona model, which is what some of the smart operators used to do in Las Vegas, which is make cater to the gamblers and make the food cheap, the rooms cheap, the drinks good. Cocktails cheap, free, and just go after the gamblers to try to make the money on gambling. And the other thing is, you know, I worked in a casino where they hired the dealers for their personality. They wanted the dealers to interact with the customers and make sure that the customers were having a good time. And that seems to be the opposite of what goes on in Vegas these days. The dealers are surly and it's the farthest thing from good customer service that I can imagine in most casinos now.
And Barona also has very loose games, but they have a very knowledgeable pit who can pick off a piece.
Yeah, and I absolutely agree with that philosophy too.
Yeah, so I would probably have loose video poker games and not allow me to play. But I
yeah, and you know, I had a friend who lived in Hawaii and was dealing an underground game there in Hawaii, and it was single deck and probably a 0.5% to 1% advantage off the top to the players. But the players were so bad, you know, they were playing at a big disadvantage. So, yeah, I agree. Loose games, but knowledgeable operators.
And according to Max, who I believe, when they pick off an AP, they'll give them a free lunch, say no hard feelings, this is just a business model. It's not throw them out, but it's sometimes if Max is on the property, he will actually take them to lunch and have a chat. But it's not.
Yeah, they're not hostile about it.
All right. Next question. We've talked about gambling teams and the need for trust. Do you know of any AP teams that have organized themselves as legal entities, perhaps LLCs, with operating agreements and remedies in case of problems? Any thoughts about viability or benefit of this approach?
Yeah, I certainly know of teams who have, formed entities and had contracts and all those kind of things. Now, the ones that I know that did that, the operators of the team or people on the team happen to be lawyers. So it's second nature for them to do those kind of things. I don't see any downside to doing that. I mean, other than it's a certain amount of work and expense, but if you can do that in-house, then why not? I mean, you still have to trust people, right? Just because you have a corporation set up and you have people sign contracts doesn't mean they can't steal from you.
All right. The next question is for me. Someone enjoyed my recent article on the strategy difference between 9-6-double-double and 10-6-40-double-double. So this guy says he recently mastered the strategy for 9-6 and don't really like learning those changes. As you know, the payback for 10-6-40 is close to 99.96%. Can you tell me the payback for that game would be if you used the 9-6-double-double strategy for it? So my answer is, I'm glad you liked the article, but it was actually on the difference between both games were 10-6-double-double bonus. Once was with a 250 coin straight flush, and once with a 200 coin straight flush. But on your specific question, is using 9-6-double-double get you pretty close? Certainly higher than 99.9%. Exactly how much higher depends on how accurately you play the 9-6 game. One of the differences between the two games is on a hand like King 10-4 suited and two other cards 9 or lower, the 9-6-double-double bonus says to hold all three of the suited cards, and the 10-6 either variation says just to hold the King 10. All right, back to a question mainly for Richard. In Nathaniel Tilton's book, The Blackjack Life, he says he establishes the running count, the true count, and it subtracts one for the offset. I haven't read this anywhere else, so why does he subtract one for the offset, and where would he have learned to do this?
Well, this is written about a lot, but maybe just not quite in those words. So the idea is that when you have, because the game of blackjack has approximately a 0.5% disadvantage off the top, and each true count is worth approximately 0.5%, then when you have a true count of 1, you are now at break even. So you don't have an edge, you're at break even at that point. So that's where the offset comes in. And this also, people have some confusion around the term unit. So some players talk about units in terms of their minimum bet. So if they're playing at a $10 table, they think they're playing a $10 unit. But the way I would recommend you think about units is a unit is the amount you're going to bet for each 0.5% advantage. So if your true count is 2, and you offset it by 1, so you now have 0.5% advantage, and let's say your unit is going to be $25 at a 0.5%. So if you're playing at a $10 table, at a true 2, you would bet 1 unit. At a true 3, you would bet 2 units. At a true 4, you would bet 3 units, each time subtracting 1 from the true count. So let's say you're spreading from 10 to 100 using 20. Your units are $25, not $10. So, and in that case, if you're spreading from $10 to 100, your spread is 1 to 10, but your units are $25 each.
So, and you would bet 10 off the top.
Yeah, anytime you have a disadvantage, you would bet 10.
Very good. Someone says he has been watching your tubes on YouTube. They're very informative. I'm not sure how he watched them, though, because they're audio only. On the show of October 29th last year, you interviewed AP Prax. About 7-8 minutes into the show, Prax talked about wiring $2,000 to a lady for some training in card counting, hold carding, etc. Who is that lady? What is her name? And have you interviewed her? I would like to see your show with her on YouTube. And yes, she's been on the show at least twice. She goes under the name RX Gamble. She has a blog, which we recommend. At the time of her last interview, which was a few months ago, she indicated she probably was not going to teach that class anymore. Part of her reason for teaching it at that time was she was going through a divorce and needed to show income for settlement purposes. And so she thought she would do it once only and no more. Next question. Is it lawful to be asked for your identification when getting a payout on a jackpot? I'm going to try this first and then see what Richard has to say. Well, it is certainly lawful for them to ask you. What I think you mean is, can they demand to see it where if you refuse, they can refuse to pay you? I think that's your question rather than just being asked. Now, for the latter, it depends on the game and how much it was. For games where W2Gs are issued, like slots, video poker, and a few others, a jackpot of at least $1,200 requires you to show ID. There are drawings where they issue 1099s, and sometimes $600 is enough to trigger that. And some casinos have the policy that they add up all your drawings all year long, so you can get a $50 win on a drawing and need to show ID at those casinos. Now, if the jackpot is more than $10,000 and you're taking cash, CTR rules require ID to be shown. If you're taking a check, well, you got to show ID for them to make out the check. So, otherwise, casino policy differs. Sometimes you have to get gaming involved to get paid, and sometimes they're going to tell you have to show ID. Richard.
Yeah, no, I think you pretty well covered it. And just to add, if it's an Indian casino, they can do anything they want, and you have no recourse.
Pretty much. Next question. This will be for Richard. It says, I'm a green chip card counter, playing usually as a lone wolf. When I started 3 years ago, I thought that with all the resources available, there must be a lot of card counters out there. I have found them to be very rare. I play 30 to 40 hours a month and travel with a couple of others, but we mostly play individually. My question is, are we that rare, and why wouldn't more do this?
I don't think you're rare at all. You know, if you look at the Blackjack Discord, there's over 1,000 people on there. I mean, not active, they're not all on there all the time. But, you know, I think Colin Jones has a lot to do with a big resurgence in card counting. His book, I would recommend if you haven't read it, for stories of the road warriors out there. But I guess it depends on the area of the country you're in that why you're not running into more. I don't know how much you're looking. Many card counters head into a casino, look for a spot to sit down, and don't really look around at what's going on around them. So believe me, there are a lot of them out there. Although I will say this, many, many card counters have branched into other things. So they may not always be playing at the blackjack table. They may be playing other games in the casino as well.
And Colin Jones, of course, is the proprietor of Blackjack Apprenticeship, who was a sponsor of ours. And many of the people in his book, The 21st Century Card Counter, have been on our show once or twice. Next question. Now that online casino / sports betting is becoming legalized in many states, some casinos are linking their players' clubs to your online account. Do you suspect or know perhaps if your ADT, average daily theoretical, could be affected by your online play? Essentially, I'd hate to have a $25 bet playing for an online bonus / my brick-and-mortar casino ADT. And my answer is, I have no idea if they do this. To find out, I would need a friendly host. Some hosts are professional friends, and many of them can be befriended, especially with under-the-table tipping. So you find out what so you could ask them directly, or if they won't tell you, ask them if they know your current ADT, and then go ahead and make your $25 bet online and come back a month later and ask what your ADT is, and then you have your answer. But I don't know any other.
You may have ruined your ADT at that point. So,
well, for that one casino, but that can be built up again if it's not something that you continue to do.
So I would, first of all, I would be skeptical that a host is even going to know the answer, right? A lot of this is too new, and, you know, a lot of people just don't know the answers to these kind of questions. But I would be surprised if there isn't talk about this on the forums. So, you know, VP Free or Blackjack the Forum or places like that, I would think that if people were getting their ADT slashed over this, you would be hearing about it. So I would put that question in places like that and see if anybody, or Reddit would be another place to ask about it.
The Wizard of Vegas has a website with that. Good. Okay, Richard, would you have any reservations playing a beatable table game at a shop that scans all IDs and forces you to lower your mask for the camera when entering? Such a difficult question.
I would not play. I would not enter that casino. That's my answer.
It's not the question, but on that subject, recently somebody invited us to dinner at Circa, which is a place that scans your ID. They don't force you to lower your mask, but they scan your ID. So they physically take your driver's license and scan the barcode on the back and hand it back to you. Now, last week, I went to the DMV, had an eye test, passed it, and so I will get a new driver's license in the mail in 10 days maybe. And your old driver's license, which they handed back to me, they used a punch to put 26 holes in it in the shape of void. So there's, I don't know, 8 ones for the V and an O. This is a half inch high, 2 inches long about. But on the back side of it where the punch press exited, it's really sharp edges. So it's easy to feel. There's no doubt about it at all. And so, but I gave the ID to the guy. He must have felt it, scanned it, gave it back to me. Have a nice day. So never understand about how the scanning of the ID really works. Somebody said he recently playing at a month-long casino promotion at a podunk town. It was clear there were no other APs attacking it. After a few days, I was considered playing something with a smaller edge to possibly prolong the promotion. When talking to a manager, he mentioned the promotion might be ongoing, but it was undecided that it would continue. I ended up hitting it hard, and they canceled the promo the following month. How do you feel about taking smaller edges in attempt to have the casino continue a promotion? Richard.
Well, I would expand this to not just a promotion, but any kind of a really lucrative opportunity. And this is the eternal question, right? Do you milk the cow or do you butcher it? And it's totally subjective, and for me, depends entirely on how likely do I think it is for other people to find this, and if they find it, would they recognize it for what it is and start killing it? So most of the time, I feel like people, if they found it, they're going to kill it, so we should just kill it now. Another factor is this a place I'm close to that I'm going to be around often, or did I have to travel halfway across the country to get to this? The further it is away and the less I like the location, the more I would want to just kill it and move on. So you're always just making your best guess.
For me, in video poker promotions, at least 95% of my play is done in Las Vegas. And I have been teaching classes in Vegas for 25 years. And there are a number of players and casino employees who recognize me. There are enough players out there scouting that if I sit down and I'm hammering a game, I will be observed. And they will take the opinion, if Dancer thinks this is a good game to play, we should look at it when he gets off, trying to figure out why he's playing it. So since I'm going to be seen, others are going to start hammering it as soon as I get up. Usually, if it's a good deal, I'm going to hammer it myself for as long as they let me. All right. We are going to take a brief commercial break. South Point has more than 10,000 games, returning more than 99%. This is more than anyone else has. In April, the promotion is the $500,000 Guaranteed Money Madness promotion. Two casino-wide promotions are running at all times. The larger begins at $10,000 and must be hit by $25,000. All active players receive $25 added to their account when it goes off if you were not the one who hits it. If you were the one who hits it, you're going to have to settle for the lousy $23,000 or whatever it is. Smaller progressive in the range of $1,000 to $2,500 is also going at all times. It's expected that the smaller one will be hit about three times a day. Active players who played at least $1 in the previous minute with their player's card inserted are eligible to win. Now, when you play, there is a little box at the lower left of your screen, which gives you the amount of the two jackpots at all times and whether or not you're eligible for them. So whether or not you have played enough. So they used to disturb it with messages. Now they don't break up your game, but it's in a box and it's visible at all time. All the restaurants at South Point are now open, at least some of the time. VideoPoker.com is a place where you can practice lots of video poker games. You can sign up for their gold membership at $8.95 a month or $79.95 a year. That allows you to get correction on most of the games and also play without commercials. The game of the week is Lucky Eights. This is a rare case where a video poker game has the same name as a table game side bet. It's a 10 coin per line game where you get bonuses for three or more eights, including full houses with three eights. If you get dealt trips or higher, every 35 seconds, you get to spin a wheel, which include amounts ranging from 188 coins to, very occasionally, 18,888 coins. induces wild variations, you spin the wheel on dealt flushes or higher, which occurs every 42 hands on average. You'll need to figure out the strategy for yourself, but it appears to be possible with simple algebra. With 8-8-4-4-5, for example, it must be correct to just hold the eights because of the bonuses on three or more eights. On deuces wild variations, where you would normally hold a suited jack 10-9 over a pair of eights, in this game, surely holding the eights would be better. All right, we're back to our questions. Someone wanted to know if I had the chance to look at the video poker at the new Mohegan Sun in Las Vegas, where the old Hard Rock used to be. And to paraphrase the commercial which you just heard, to paraphrase what the South Point has, we say the South Point has 10,000 games, 10,000 games returning more than 99%. Paraphrasing that for the new casino, would the Mohegan Sun in Las Vegas has zero games returning more than 99% and damn few returning more than 98%. I went in several hours after they opened, prepared to make a play and see what would come in the mail, but after searching virtually every machine, I didn't play at all. What would be the point? The casino is not giving the video poker player any sporting chance at all. I'll check it out again in 6 months to see if they've decided to change their policy, but at the current time, there's no reason for me to go into that casino at all.
Isn't the name of the casino Virgin? I mean, I think we should call it that so as not to – because we'll be getting, emails saying, I looked around for the Mohegan Sun Casino and couldn't find it.
Well, on the signs outside, it does say Virgin. It does say Mohegan Sun. Oh. But it is physically where the Hard Rock was. Right, it is the same building. And so it has been gutted and remodeled, but it is still this circular sidewalk area, basically around the center casino, and with various wings going out. Nobu, the restaurant, is still there. The other restaurants I saw are in the same places as the old ones were, but they have different names. The inside looks different, but the basic structure of the building is still the same. As last I heard, they had not named the joint yet, which was their place where they had a musical event usually, usually a rock and roll headliners. So presumably they're still going to use that theater, but what it's going to be called, I don't know. Next question. What are some of the ways to protect yourself when traveling with large sums of money, on domestic flights or international flights? Richard.
Well, on international flights, if it's over $10,000, you must declare it. So, I mean, absolutely you should do that. I mean, if you want to protect yourself, because they absolutely will just take it if they find it. Domestically, you do not have to declare it. Many professional gamblers, when traveling with cash, carry with them things like blackjack books, like Blackjack and the Law, copies of their tax returns that show they're a professional gambler. Some of the lawyers, like Bob Loeb or Bob Nersessian, will, for a fee, give you a letter from them as a lawyer saying, this is my client and they are a professional gambler and travel with large sums of money. So those are some of the things you can do to protect yourself. Also, if you're going through one of those body scanners, they will see it, so I put it in my carry-on. If you're going through the regular metal detector, then I keep the money on me in my pockets. So those are some of the things I do.
When you put it in your luggage, do you put it in envelopes so that it is that are non-see-through and sealed, or how do you do that?
Well, so usually in my case, no, because usually I have money in pockets or money belt, because I don't know if I'm going through a scanner or a metal detector. And if I see that I have to go through a scanner, then I take it out of my pockets and put it into my carry-on. But at that point, I don't have a, you know, an envelope or something to put it in. Oh, also, I would say when driving, I've talked to many people who've been stopped, and the, you know, the police end up searching your car even though you tell them they can't. Again, I would have the money on my person. All of the people that I've talked to that have had money confiscated by the police, it was always in the car. And I asked them, did the police search your body? Did they pat you down? And the answer has always been no. So if you're driving and you're getting pulled over, I would have the money on my person.
Okay. On a slot machine that has a progressive that can be won by betting the minimum bet, is it better to play the minimum bet or the maximum bet? There are no other bonuses for playing a maximum bet. Is it more likely the progressive would hit with a max bet in? And my answer to that is, in most jurisdictions, the machines are random, meaning it doesn't matter whether you're betting one coin or max coin. So there are definitely, in the old piggy banking games, it was definitely the smart idea to play one coin. And that was definitely the right play. I think that still holds.
I think it would depend on the machine. So, yeah, it would just depend on the machine. If that's really true, that the progressive can be hit on one coin, in many progressives, you can only hit the progressive on max coins. So it just depends on the machine.
Okay, here's a question for Richard. When you were learning to count cards or other advanced techniques, did you have any eureka moments where everything came together?
Yeah, well, learning any game or learning anything, you start out with kind of a tunnel vision, right? And you see a small circle. And as you get better at it, your vision starts to expand. I don't think I can pinpoint an exact moment where I went, aha, you know. But I do know that – so when I started card counting, I was playing single deck basically. And most of the shoe games even were dealt face down. So I – developed this pattern where I would count the cards as the dealer was turning them over in pairs. And when I first then had to count a face-up game, it kind of overwhelmed me because all the cards were coming out at once. And it took time for me to be able to count a face-up game. It was much more difficult because of the way I'd been doing it before. But eventually there reached a point where I could wait, not try to count the first card as it was coming out, wait for the dealer to deal the player their second card and count them in pairs as they dealt. But yeah, for any move, there's a moment where you go, oh, I'm finally starting to get this. I'm finally feeling competent.
Okay, of the other techniques you've learned, such as including counting, shuffle tracking, sequencing, hole carding, slices and dicing, etc., edge sorting, I guess, which of any of these did you find the most difficult to master and why? Which was the most rewarding to execute, in dollars or just plain old satisfaction?
Well, of the things I can talk about... I guess the hardest to execute is sequencing. It reminded me of I played very few chess tournaments, but when you play a chess tournament and you're focusing so hard, concentrating so much for 6 or 8 hours at a time, it's mentally exhausting, and that's true of sequencing as well. And in the beginning, I could only play for maybe an hour and a half or something, and you know, my brain would just fry. And slowly over time, I got better at it and could play longer and remember more sequences and things. But sequencing was a really difficult one to, and I won't even say master. I don't think I've by any stretch mastered it. But
Kate, somebody wanted to know what our favorite films are. First, gambling films, and then cinema in general.
You want to start, or you don't watch any films? So.
Well, I don't. I'm not much of a movie guy. In the past 20 years, I've seen less than 5 movies when they were current. I don't watch much TV either, except that since Bonnie and I used to go dancing regularly, but we haven't done so for more than a year due to COVID, I figured we needed something to do together if we're going to stay together. So we got Netflix and are watching an average of an hour or two a night as something to do together. And so we're in the middle of Schitt's Creek and have watched The Queen's Gambit and have enjoyed Last Tango in Halifax and starting in on Arrested Development, which I know is almost 20 years old since they started, but never saw it the first time. So that was me. I did see the movie 21 in the first week it came out. I was familiar with the book. I knew it was about the MIT team, and John Chang is somebody that I know and like. And so I watched that immediately. I found it unrealistic. John tells me that the book changed half the things and the movie changed the other half. I like the idea of them meeting in strip clubs, although John assures me that never happened. So I did see Cincinnati Kid years ago. I liked it. I've watched a couple of, I'm blanking on the names, and I'm sure, well, I'm blanking on the names of other gambling movies. I have seen a few. How about you, Richard?
Well, movies is something that I could talk about for a whole show, if not several shows. So, first of all, I want to make a distinction. A lot of times when this discussion comes up on the internet, people confuse what I call Vegas movies with gambling movies. So the movie Casino is a great, probably the best Vegas movie, but it is not a gambling movie. The best gambling movie of all time for me, without question, is The Hustler. Paul Newman, Jackie Gleason, George C. Scott. Unbelievably fantastic film. If you haven't seen it, I can't recommend it highly enough. Other favorite gambling movies for me are Rounders, California Split, which many people have not seen. And here's one, a recent one that may still be on Netflix. There was a film called Mississippi Grind, and it's kind of a modern day version of California Split. It's about two gamblers who basically, one of them is a guy who, in the case of California Split, one of the guys, it's two gamblers who go off on an adventure together, gambling. And one of the guys is going to be happy no matter what happens to him, and the other is going to be miserable no matter what happens to him. And Mississippi Grind is kind of like that too. One guy is going to find some happiness in life, and the other guy is a degenerate and going to be miserable. And so I don't normally like movies about degenerate gamblers, like The Gambler or Owning Mahoney. I just don't care for those. I like kind of happier films, especially if it involves professional gambling. Hated the movie 21. I thought that was really awful. Cincinnati Kid, I really liked, although really kind of unbelievable. But great actors and Yeah, I don't know. Like I said, I could go on for a long time, but those are some of my favorites.
I actually liked some of the gambling scenes in James Bond movies. One dealt with a bridge game where Bond introduced a stack deck and won this unbelievable bet.
Yeah, there was in Goldfinger, one of the earliest James Bond movies, there was a scene where Goldfinger is playing gin rummy and with his opponent. His opponent is under a peak. They're playing out by a pool, and Goldfinger has a guy in the hotel room looking at the guy's hand through a telescope and relaying him the information in his hand. And it's funny because that came out around the time, I think, of the Friars Club scandal, where they were doing that to play to guys in the Friars Club in Beverly Hills.
All right. Somebody wanted to know if your film Edge of the World is available for purchase. This reader did not see it available on Amazon.
First of all, I wouldn't call Edge of the World my film. I was one of the writers on it. I did not see it after I left. I heard that another writer came in after me. So I've never seen the finished film. And as I say, I wouldn't consider it one of my films. I'm kind of curious about it. I believe the last I checked, it was available for rent on Amazon Prime. I don't know if it can be purchased or not, but they did have it on Amazon Prime. And if somebody watches it, let me know. Let me know how it was.
Although somebody who did not know what you wrote would not know how much was of what you wrote was undone.
Yeah, yeah. So if it was good, I'll take the credit. If it was bad, yeah, somebody came in after me.
That sounds right. Okay. Somebody wants to know about AP ethics at a blackjack table in regards to other APs. This player was recently in an Indian casino with only two blackjack tables. He was the only player when two other players joined me, maxing out the table. One was a ploppy, and the other one bought in with three hundreds at a $10 minimum table. And soon we were both raising and lowering our bets with the count. When this first happened, the dealer gasped. It was that obvious. We had a change of dealers. I watched the dealer thinking she might notify the floor. Thankfully, she did not. I was spreading 1 to 10. The other AP was 1 to 20. Neither of us tipped the dealer. The next shoe, the count shot up just at the end to a 4 true count, and we both hit our max bet of 2 times 50 and him 2 times 100, just as another change of dealer happened. That dealer beelined it to the floor manager. The manager came over to our table to watch the hand. I was dealt an 11 and 10, the dealer showing an ace. The whole table took insurance. The dealer did not have blackjack. I doubled down on both hands, getting a 20 and a 21. Dealer pulls a 9, giving him a 20.
We don't need to know all the details of the guy's hands, right? I mean, so the question is about what do you do when this – you know, when another card counter shows up at your table. If it were me, I would say something to the guy to make it clear that, hey, I was here first. This is not a good idea for us to be playing together. And you can find creative ways of saying that, and if they don't get the hint, then there have certainly been times where I've been an asshole, and when he raises his bet, I would not raise mine, and I would say something to the dealer like, oh, wow, maybe I should bet more. Whenever he raises his bet, you know, the players always win. Or whenever he takes insurance, the dealer always has it. And I would make it very uncomfortable for that guy to stay on the table if he didn't leave after asking him politely to leave.
This asshole side of you is kind of fascinating to me. I doing the podcast, I don't see it. You've never been the asshole to me. But I'm wondering what I would have to do to see that more in action, but maybe I hope I never find out.
Well, hey, okay. If I'm there to make money, you know what I mean? There's certainly been times when I needed people off a game, and that's what I'm there for. So I got to get rid of them.
Next question. Guy says, I'm from Denmark. He runs a poker game here on a part-time basis and would consider himself a winning recreational player. How would somebody like me learn to play AP slots? He doesn't know any gurus in Denmark. Well, there's several blogs or Twitters. RX Gamble is one of them, and occasionally you'll see a name in there for another Twitter. And so hang out with those people enough, and you'll learn other places where the subject is discussed.
Yeah, Mickey Krim is one on Twitter. I don't think you'll get much from RX Gamble's Twitter, but you can look at who is following her and who she follows. Same thing with Mickey Krim. Because a lot of guys on Twitter, they're posting pictures of games that they're playing. Now, even if you don't know the right number to sit down on a machine, you can look at that picture and go, okay, now I see this particular machine. I'm going to go look for that machine in a casino and see what I can figure out. You know, and if you can't – we've talked a lot about establishing a network. And the way you establish a network is through social media, right, even if you're in Denmark. And I think you'll be seen as less of a threat if you're in Denmark than if you're here in Las Vegas. So – as you interact with people on Twitter, eventually maybe you can get into their DMs and say, hey, you know, do you play this machine? Talk to them privately about it, you know.
Very good. That's going to do it for our questions. We do not have enough questions for another entire episode, so please keep sending them. We love them, and often we learn something from these questions, too. I learn a lot by I give an answer, and then Richen goes, no, Bob's wrong, and this is the way it really is. So I actually learn a lot by all that. So send them to gamblingwithanedge@gmail.com. Richard has a Twitter account, and you can leave them on gamblingwithanedge.com in the response section to our episodes that are posted there. At the end of our show, we have a recommended section. So, Richard, what do you got for us today?
Well, two things we talked about during the show. You know, one is the movie The Hustler, which if you have not seen it, you should absolutely go watch that movie. Even you young people who say, I don't like to watch a movie in black and white. Well, you know, get over it. It'll be worth it, I promise you. And another thing we talked about is RX Gamble's blog, which is at rxgamble.com/blog. And she has had a new post on April 3rd. And, you know, if A, she's an entertaining writer. But B, if you read that post, there is stuff to be learned in there. She's not going to spoon-feed it to you, but just reading that post, you'll go, oh, I didn't think of that, or oh, that's what I should be doing. So, yeah, check out her latest blog post. I think it's titled The Big Four.
Now, about The Hustler, that Paul Newman plays the young kid at that point, who's schooled by Minnesota Fats, who's Jackie Gleason. But a later version of is called The Color of Money, where Paul Newman is the older guy. He's old by this point, and a new young kid comes along. Did you see that, Richard, and did you like that?
Yeah, you know, that's a movie. So the young kid – Paul Newman is playing the same person. This is a sequel. And the young kid in that movie is Tom Cruise, and it's done by one of my favorite directors, Martin Scorsese. I wanted to love that movie. I felt like it was just kind of okay. For me, Tom Cruise really kind of chews up the scenery in this movie. I thought the movie's okay, but I didn't love it anywhere near as much as the first, The Hustler.
And I don't know what the phrase "chews up the scenery" means.
Oh, chews up the scenery is when somebody overacts. So they just go so big and so broad that you find them ridiculously unbelievable. So Jack Nicholson is a perfect example of chewing up the scenery in most of the movies he does.
Yes, he does play over the top characters, that's for sure. And I have I'm going to recommend brand. It's called Tattooed Chef, and it's organic acai bowls, where acai is spelled A-C-A-I, with at the bottom of the C is a little squiggly mark, which might be Portuguese, I'm not sure. The acai berries come from the Amazon Delta primarily, and in Brazil and a few other countries. It comes box of six, which is basically frozen chocolate gelato with some acai berries and some granola, which is primarily coconut shavings. So you need to let the acai berries gelato melt for a half hour, and then it's a nice sized dish. We found it at Costco. They sell it in boxes of six for about $12. And we enjoyed it. I looked up on Wikipedia for how to pronounce acai before I made a fool of myself by calling it something else, and learned that currently they believe there's no actual proven health benefits to acai at all. They're just a nice tasting berry, so which is somewhat disappointing, but that's what we have. There you go.
It sounds like a way to eat something like ice cream, but tell yourself it's healthy.
Yeah, and it's relatively small sized. It's a good dessert size, without for including everything. Each one is, I don't know, 150 calories, something like that. So it is, if you're going to have dessert, it's a relatively good option. So Richard, thank you very much for the show. Listeners, please send us more questions. And everybody, go out and hit lots of royal flushes. Good day.